Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host.
Welcome back to the Whence Came You Masonic Podcast. I'm Brother Nicholas McGeehee, and I'll be your special guest host for this episode. I'm very honored to have been accepted by Right Worshipful Robert Johnson to host this episode of WCY in a series that he is doing where he allows guest hosts to commandeer, if you will, his show for an episode. I personally am a big fan of WCY and always find the conversations between RJ and the ever-elusive Frauder O to be most interesting and enlightening. Right Worshipful RJ is a brother that embraces the craft and his brethren in a humble and serviceable manner. Thank you, Brother RJ, for this privilege and for being a personal Masonic role model of mine. Turning the conversation to myself, I'm a member of Placid Lodge number 282 in Lake Placid, Florida. I was raised in April of 2017 to the sublime degree of a Master Mason, and I enjoy learning about our craft from some of the more experienced brethren. I also have my own YouTube channel where I speak on a variety of topics, including esoteric studies and spiritual development. You can find me on YouTube by searching my channel name, Nicholas McGeehee. I'm the handsome fellow in the thumbnail. You can't miss it. Without further ado, I do have two papers that I have written and that I'll be presenting to you. To get started, I will begin with my first paper titled, The Cable Toe. An anchor for your soul. I drew them with the cords of man, with bonds of love. Hosea, chapter 11, verse 4, King James Version. Chances are that if you're reading this, then you understand what the cable toe is. But for some reason, if you do not, allow me to briefly explain. The word cable toe is Masonic in its entirety, and is not generally used outside of a Masonic setting. In its physical description, a cable toe could be said to resemble a noose, and has become a topic of controversy in the past among people who tend to wear tinfoil headwear. As Freemasons, we have used the cable toe in our ritual for centuries. I'm sure we will all remember wearing this odd accessory as we journeyed through the craft degrees of the Blue Lodge, and we are even provided a beautiful symbolic meaning for this intricate rope. We are taught that the cable toe represents our ability to be made readily available to donate our time and hearts to the craft. When we become Freemasons, we agree to sacrifice a piece of ourselves to the benefit of our beloved fraternity, as much as we may be able, if it is within the length of our cable toe. If we research the word cable length, we discover that it is a nautical form of measurement, measuring roughly 720 feet. And for our European brethren, that is roughly 219 meters. So I guess one of the ways we can look at the cable toe is how far one would be willing to go for the service of the craft. If you have been a Freemason for any length of time, it would probably be safe to say that you have heard several other symbolic meanings behind this age-old symbol. Maybe you've heard it compared to an umbilical cord, and when you are released from the cable toe, you have been reborn and are now free to grow within the craft. Rebirth was and still is a common reference within the mystery traditions and esoteric orders throughout the history of the world. Maybe you have heard the cable toe symbolizes our bondage to worldly desires and materialist ideals. Or perhaps you've been told that the cable toe does in fact represent a noose, or a way to control the candidate as he travels through our ancient and mystic rites, only becoming free from the certain death that it represents when you conform yourself to our practices. Regardless, there are many interesting viewpoints, and no one can really discredit another's viewpoint in this mysterious symbol. Might I offer you another viewpoint to look at the cable toe? A connection that, as hard as I have looked, have not been able to find in any other literary source. I have scoured the internet only to be disappointed in my findings. To follow along with me on this journey, you will need to keep an open mind. There is no point in beating around the bush. I believe the cable toe has a direct correlation with our soul and the astral realm. You're probably thinking, wow, great, this was a complete waste of time. Sorry, no refunds, but since you've come this far, you might as well stay to see just how I will be able to make this connection. Of course, if you are the type of person who looks at life with your eyes open and believe you are seeing, then this is your stop. But for those of you who are still with me, are you ready to peer through the looking glass? Every student of esoteric teachings has more than likely either read or heard about the astral realm and the concept of astral projection. Even the big three Abrahamic faiths have a similar concept to this spiritual plane. The Catholic Church and some Christian denominations who still believe in this world call it purgatory. Purgatory being described as a plane of existence in between that of earth and heaven, where one may be sent if their transgressions do not permit them entrance into heaven, nor find them deserving of hell. In the study of the Kabbalah, a form of Jewish mysticism, we learn of the world of Yetzirah, one of the four worlds found in the Tree of Life. In the Kabbalistic teachings, Yetzirah relates directly to communication with God, either through prayer or the study of the Torah. And in the study of Islam, we find the world called Barzakh, which has similar function to Catholics' purgatory. In the Islamic faith, Muslims believe that Barzakh is a place between heaven and hell, where a soul goes to wait for Judgment Day. Some Muslim scholars state that the trial one goes through in Barzakh directly correlate to the life you've lived on earth. The astral realm itself is depicted as a spiritual dimension that both mirrors our world and yet is astoundingly larger and more complex. It is said that this world is able to be visited by means of what is called astral projection. Now, astral projection is the act of having your astral body. Some may refer to it as a soul, or some may refer to it as consciousness. Exit your physical body and be able to consciously travel amongst the astral plane. The practice of astral travel is achieved through deep meditation, mantras, and other exercises aimed to increase one's spiritual consciousness. To better introduce my theory, I will provide a quote from William Walter Atkinson, better known by his pseudonym Yogi Ramacharaka. This excerpt is from Yogi Ramacharaka's book, 14 Lessons in Yogi Philosophy and Oriental Occultism, and reads as follows. It is possible for a person to project his astral body or travel in his astral body to any point within the limits of the Earth's attraction, and the trained occultist may do so at will, under the proper conditions. Others may occasionally take such trips without knowing just how they do it and having afterwards the remembrance of a particular and very vivid dream. In fact, many of us do take such trips where the physical body is wrapped in sleep, and one often gains much information in this way. Upon subjects in which he is interested, by holding astral communication with others interested in the same subject, all unconsciously, of course. The conscious acquirement of knowledge in this way is possible only to those who have progressed quite a long way along the path of attainment. The trained occultist merely places himself in proper mental condition and then wishes himself to some particular place, and his astral travels there with the rapidity of light, or even more rapidly. The untrained occultist, of course, has no such degree or control over his astral body and is more or less clumsy in his management of it. The astral body is always connected with the physical body during the life of the latter by a thin, silk-like astral thread, which maintains the communication between the two. Were this cord to be severed, the physical body would die, as the connection of the soul with it would be terminated. Did you catch that last part? The thin silk-like astral thread is sometimes referred to as the silver cord that extends from one's physical body to their astral body during out-of-body experiences and astral projection. This silver cord has been reported being seen by those who claim to regularly travel in the astral realm, as well as people who have had near-death experiences and have described floating above their physical bodies. Others say this cord acts as a guide to your physical body if you are traveling amongst the astral planes, ensuring you do not get lost. Most occultists and religious mystics do agree on one thing, and that is if the silver cord linking your physical body to your astral form was to break, it would mean certain death. Now, some bells should be ringing inside your head. Every Mason should remember hearing a certain Bible verse throughout their journey to becoming a Master Mason. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 6 through 7, King James Version. Certainly a stretch, but what great theories are not? As Freemasons, we are charged to always seek out wisdom and truth. The truth is, while this is a great symbolic theory to our cable toe, it is not necessarily the true meaning behind it. If we look at our great mysteries and the various symbols associated with it, it is best to view these symbols with the same intent as one would view the ink blots on a Rorschach test, taking of course into consideration that every brother may see our mysteries in a different way. Now, I will not be going into any further connections I have for relating the cable toe to the silver cord of the astral realm, for fear of violating my obligation. But with that being said, I charge you brothers to seek out further connections on your own. Trust me, they're not hard to find. In conclusion, I would like to leave you brethren with a certainly ludicrous idea. What if you never physically received the great mysteries of Freemasonry? What if in fact only your soul, bearing pure intent, was eligible to receive these mystic rites? And of course your physical body awaiting your return in a small room adjoining the lodge, securely anchored to the cable toe. May the great architect of the universe bless you and keep you forever. My second paper that I have written is a paper I called Memento Mori. Now, I do have a disclaimer before I read this paper. Due to the nature of this story revolving around death, this story may make some people uncomfortable. I will attempt to keep some of the more graphic details of this story to a minimum, as long as they do not take away from key parts of these memories. This is a true story, and the names of all people involved have been changed to protect their identity. I am no stranger to death. When I had reached the age of 21, I had already attended 16 funerals and had to miss quite a few more. Close friends and family have come and gone into this reality that we have shared, including the loss of my mother 2 years ago. I have lost people to age, disease, suicide, overdose, and even lost a close friend in war. Death has surrounded me from a young age, ever taunting me and reminding me of his existence. Working in law enforcement for several years, I have seen and worked a variety of deaths, from natural causes to drug overdoses, suicides by hanging and other means, and of course, homicides. Needless to say, at the time that this story takes place, I have become comfortable with this facet of life, but on this particular day, I came to terms with my own mortality in a way I would never expect. It was a Sunday, around approximately 4:30 p.m., and I only had 1.5 hours left on my shift. I was in the office working on some paperwork for a burglary case I was closing, and daydreaming about my plans for my next 2 days off. My fantasies were unfortunately interrupted when my radio keyed up. Dispatch Lima 1, that's my call sign. Can you copy a Signal 7? Signal 7 rang through my mind because I understand it to be a dead body. I sighed. I was so close to being off, and I understand how long these death investigations can take. I told dispatch that I'll be en route and left the police department, along with the fantasies I'd been dreaming about. I arrived at the scene and observed two men, probably in their 20s, along with a woman the same age, standing outside the residence where the body was located. I exited my vehicle and approached the family. I learned that their names were David, Ben, and Stacy, and they had come to the home to check on their father, whom they haven't heard from in a week, only to not receive an answer at the door. David, the oldest of the three, told me he had climbed through the window and found his father, John, dead on the couch. I expressed my condolences to the family and commented on their strength that they were exhibiting during this time, which I knew in my heart was just shock. David told me that his father could have possibly died from an overdose and was known to use crack cocaine quite frequently. I entered the home and was greeted by the familiar smell of decomposing flesh. I closed the door behind me, fearful that the family would have the same smell that I had just experienced. I entered the living room, where I saw John sitting upright on the couch. Blood had flowed from his right nostril onto his shirt and had since dried. I radioed dispatch and confirmed that John had indeed passed on, and then promptly began my investigation. John was a Caucasian male in his 50s, weighed approximately 220 pounds. However, due to John being in an advanced stage of putrefaction, John looked more like the uncle from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. His skin had darkened to an almost midnight black and began to bloat, creating air pockets within the body. I put John's time of death at about a week to a week and a half. I discovered evidence on the scene that made me suspect that John had indeed died from a drug overdose. I stepped away from the scene and called Detective Smith, a very good friend of mine. Due to the nature of the death, he told me he was on his way. While waiting on Detective Smith, I began to collect John's medication and search the house for more evidence. I'm searching the kitchen and something caught the corner of my eye. It was a small green dish filled to the brim with salt. Salt? Why was this so odd to me? I brushed it off but couldn't notice my subconscious tugging at me. "You don't understand yet?" it sneered. "But you will." A knock at the door brought me back to reality, and Detective Smith entered the residence. Smith smiled and greeted me with a half-hearted fist bump. It was obvious that being called in on a Sunday was the last thing on his mind. Smith began to photograph and process the scene, while I continued inventorying John's medication. I kept peeking over to the salt dish, trying to understand why it seemed so foreboding. I brought my gaze left, till my eyes rested on a picture hanging above the refrigerator. The picture was of a rooster, and as I gazed into it, everything made sense. There I was, back in a dark room, illuminated only by the flame of a candle. The flame illuminated images on the wall, a rooster, and the word vitriol. Alchemical elements were represented on the desk I was sitting at, with a dish of salt and a dish of sulfur. Also sitting in front of me was probably the most ominous symbol of them all, a human skull. I stared into the empty eye sockets of the skull and meditated on some of life's most profound mysteries. Why was I thinking about this now? "Are you good, brother?" Detective Smith asked, shattering my daydream and bringing me back to reality. "Yeah, bro, I just got some stuff on my mind," I said with a smile and shot him an awkward thumbs up. I stepped into John's old room and called my wife. I told her I was going to be late coming home tonight. She seemed a bit upset, but understood the nature of the case. She told me that she loved me and that she'll see me later. I returned to the living room and found myself staring at John. I was trying to piece clues together that would help better explain John's cause of death, but I couldn't take my mind off the symbols from the chamber of reflection. And then it washed over me, like I was caught in a tidal wave of epiphanies. This was my future. Death was going to take me one day, and my body will eventually rot, bloat, and decompose. My time on this earth is limited. What am I doing with it? Why was this hitting me now? I had worked several deaths before, and I had visited the Chamber of Reflection where I had meditated on my mortality. My relief had arrived on the scene along with a rookie that he was training. We welcomed the rookie to the quote-unquote Signal 7 Club, meaning the group of first responders who have worked deaths, which, to no surprise, is about 90% of them. The body was sent to the medical examiner's office, and I returned to the police department to process my evidence. This turned out to be a very late night for me. I later returned home, leaving my uniform outside to air out, and dragged myself into the shower. As the hot water poured out over me, my mind began swimming with thoughts on my mortality. I discovered that while some people may come to terms with death by either encountering it or through the meditation on certain symbols, I was a different case. For me, it took both. In conclusion, I implore you, brethren, with an important question. If you were to die today and were forced to review your life, would you be happy with the choices that you've made? Would you have done anything differently? Would you have been more focused on materialism than that of brotherhood and love? Only you can answer these questions and meditate on your results. Brethren, thank you for your time tonight. I hope you enjoyed these pieces that I have presented. To Brother RJ, thank you again for this opportunity. If you like the content that I presented tonight, then check out my YouTube channel and connect with me. Until we meet again, brethren, I pray that you all remain in good health and high spirits. Peace.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Be sure to join us for our next edition.